Celtics get back to practice. All is quiet, and that's a great thing. Plus, J.D. Davison's potential. The GM survey, just absurdly Marcus Smart's disrespect. I don't understand it. And a big discussion on Grant Williams and why he might not get that extension right now on the Locked On Celtics podcast.
Be ever ready. Recognize the city of champs. Boston, baby, we do what you can't. Locked on number 18, Tatum and Brown, J-team, step back. We gon' wet that and slay teams. Of course, the Celtics, who else could it be? Screaming like KG with the Larry O.B. Corrales above average, assessing the team status. Best daily pod, no cap, salary matching. Clutch like Bird to DJ, keep John on replay. Prime time, dapping up the truth on the sideline. Raining J's, how I started, raising banners, how we finished. Locked on Celtics pod, home of the winners. B.
Hey there, welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast, right here on the Locked On Podcast Network, where it is your team every day, and I am here for you every day, Monday through Friday, with a fresh, free podcast, so subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Even on YouTube, you can watch the show, ring that bell, get notified as soon as the show drops. It drops before the audio podcast, so get an early drop on YouTube. Thank you for making this show your first listen and part of your daily routine. I'm John Corrales. I'm a former professional basketball player and credentialed beat writer covering the Celtics for Boston Sports Journal. I'm now heading into my 16th season covering the team. I've also written a book called The Boston Celtics All-Time All-Star, so search for that if you'd like to pick it up. Today's show, a few different things, a couple of mailbag questions at the end that pertain to what we're seeing in camp. We'll get to that, including a question about the preseason game one, about the defense that they're playing. Get that coming up. In the second segment, the NBA GM survey dropped and a couple of interesting tidbits there about the Celtics. But I'm going to bring Tom Westerholm into the mix. Tom underscore. Golf clap.
I'm leaving. Golf clap. I'm done. Golf clap. I'm done.
That's all you're getting.
I'll stick around just enough to shout out Michael on Twitter for tweeting at me that a screen grab of you and me from yesterday's episode is why we're the underscore boys. Underscore boys, it's catching on. It's a runaway train. It's
hard to stop.
It's lighting the nation on fire.
All right, yeah, Tom Westerholm here to bless us with his presence. The talk. We'll start a little bit with the practice today. Celtics had a practice. Kind of, you know, this is probably the best news for Celtics fans, because it was uneventful. And I think around Boston, uneventful things with the Celtics is actually kind of welcome. You guys did nothing notable, and the guys weren't doing anything crazy on the floor. You know, Joe Mazzulla talked, didn't say anything crazy, like just sort of quiet, which I think they've been working really hard to get things quiet, and they're succeeding.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, uneventful is kind of nice. And it is interesting, like you said, it feels like that has been the vibe. Even media day, I mean, there were a lot of questions about email, like, you know, there were some sound bites, especially with, you know, like the players don't necessarily know what's going on either, that kind of thing. But in general, like, even media day, it was like relatively like all quiet on the Western Front, right? Like, this has not been kind of the circus that you might expect. It was circus like, you know, the week before media day, but ever since then it just kind of has felt like, okay, these are a bunch of professionals who are ready to play some hoops, and like that's really what they've been looking for. Like they're excited for the season to start. They were excited for practice to start. They were just excited to get on the floor, and you know, now that they can do that, it seems like you said, it just kind of feels like the waves are dying down a little bit. Maybe we can all stop puking over the side.
Yeah. And I think it's really interesting. The element of them coming together, that I think has been really big for this team. We saw them in that first preseason game playing with a level of focus and kind of determination, I guess, that you don't see in a first preseason game.
Right.
That first defensive possession of the preseason where they fought, they forced the Hornets into a late shot clock, like bad shot. I was like, they were defending like it's, you know, March or April, and they're fighting for playoff positioning. That was impressive and I think indicative of, you know what, blinders on, we're just focusing on what's on the floor. And they're so focused on that stuff that it's benefiting them. And I don't want to make it sound like, scandal is good for the team, but
right.
When something like that happens and everybody puts the blinders on, I think that's worked out. And I think it's a collaborative effort. When you hear JD Davison talk about, when I talked to Joe, he says, go talk to Marcus Smart. Like Joe Mazzulla is saying, yeah, we've got leaders on this team. You don't always have to talk to me. Go talk to Marcus. You know, Jaylen Brown and Fiondo Cabangeli working together extensively on pick and roll, how to angle and all that stuff. It's not just coach, player. It's everybody coming together and everybody working together. Al Horford being a mentor to people, all these guys being mentors to the younger guys. It's really, everybody is just saying, it's almost, I hate to put it this way, but us against the world mentality, but it really is. Like, it's just them focusing on them.
Yeah, I think it's not that scandal is good for the team. It's that the team is handling scandal well. Like, they're just, you know, they're just kind of letting it bounce off. And that's all you can do. And, I mean, again, it's, you know, it's a credit to how professional, you know, they use that word again. Like, it's a credit to how professional they are, how talented they are, you know, certainly. I mean, when you watch, yeah, like you said, when you watch Kelly Oubre hit the backboard exclusively on the Hornets' first shot of the preseason, the Celtics were all just after him like a bunch of Rottweilers. Like, yeah, okay, this team's ready to go. This, you know, I think they'll weather the storm.
And now shifting over to Davison, who did speak at practice on Tuesday, and you know, I don't expect a ton from Davison this year. He's very obviously, you know, he's a second round pick. He's young. The Celtics are extraordinarily guard heavy. He's not going to crack. He's not going to get any minutes. We're worried about Peyton Pritchard fighting to get minutes. But, you know, Davison has like this intrigue to him. He comes in the fourth quarter of that game. He had, what, 4 assists and no turnovers. He had some nice performances in summer league. You start to see a little bit of what maybe was enticing to him. You know, he's an interesting kid.
He is. I'm really high on him. And I think the biggest reason is, like, you know, all the athleticism stuff that we all knew coming into the kind of the, you know, you even kind of knew coming into the pre-draft process, like this kid is like just a freakish athlete. He can, you know, get up off the floor. He can dunk, all that stuff. The thing that's really impressed me and gives me kind of like, you know, a pretty decent amount of hope that he becomes like a real rotation player. And, you know, wherever that develops into is just the passing and you know, the care that he has taken with the ball. He was high assists, low turnovers, you know, in several instances at summer league. He's making passes, like kicking it out, like, you know, making the right reads. Like, I like a lot of the stuff that I'm seeing from him offensively. And when you pair the skill set that he has with the athleticism that he has and just the consistent, like when he comes into the game, you know, he's finding guys, he's getting to the rim. He needs to work on his finishing a little bit. Like, that's, you know, that's been a thing, you know, for quite some time. And I think, you know, it'll be interesting to see how his shot develops, certainly all that stuff. But when you are talking about like a point guard who's got that much athleticism, who's got the great size, who's got all this passing potential and, you know, just as showing flashes all over the place, I like him. I think there's like a little bit of kind of that first year Terry Rozier going on where, you know, it's just this kind of like, yeah, he's not going to play. He's not going to crack the rotation. When he does crack the rotation, you might not see much, but like the things that you will see are going to be like athleticism and sort of like a feel that is kind of hard to teach. Like he can kind of run an offense. And I think he's going to get a lot of time in Maine, obviously. I think, you know, like for somebody like him, that's going to be crucial. That's going to be super important to just be able to run the show and to kind of have the ball in your hand, make mistakes that don't matter, make a lot of them, you know, try everything out. All that kind of stuff is going to really benefit him. And I'm excited to see where it goes. Like he wasn't somebody that I was like super zeroed in on before the draft process, but I definitely see the vision and I think there could be something there.
I don't disagree with you at all. I think the Maine Celtics are going to be interesting to watch. I think it'd be worth popping on a couple of those games. And you know, for the folks up in Portland, I think they're going to have a really fun team to watch, especially if Cabangeli is going to be up there and kind of working on some stuff. I think that'll be a fun team to watch up in Portland. So that'll be good. My biggest question about Davison is, okay, if everything pans out, is he going to be helping the Celtics or is he going to be helping another team as part of a trade? And I think right now, just because the Celtics, the makeup of this team and where they are as a franchise, I think the best way Davison's going to help is as a promising young guard that a team will want to trade for and accept as, you know, maybe in a traded player exception deal, you get the TPE plus Davison and there's your value.
Right.
And the Celtics get the veteran that they need and they compete for championships. And if Davison turns out to be pretty good, then, you know, hey, he's in a better situation to show it off.
Well, and that's it. Brad Stevens almost kind of hinted at that when he drafted Davison. You know, he said, like, I don't remember the exact phrasing. I'd have to go back and look it up, but it was something along the lines of, you know, hey, like, you know, we want to kind of be there to help this kid along in his development process. It wasn't like we want to get this guy into our system and make him the next starting point guard of the Boston Celtics. It was like, yeah, like we want to, you know, we kind of want to be there to help. And, you know, I said at the time too, I just think that's such smart kind of basketball maneuvering by Stevens. Like, obviously we've talked about how when he trades these first round picks and goes out and gets a veteran, that's really smart, you know, for a team that's trying to win a championship. That's just good business. Mm-hmm. I think helping guys like Davison out is good business too, because if Davison hits and he goes back and, you know, even if it's not him, even if it's his agent, that's like, oh man, the Celtics really treated JD Davison well.
Yep.
You know, that's you're just improving relationships along the way. You're helping a guy out. You're trying to, you know, you're trying to build a foundation for him. I just feel like that kind of stuff, you know, it comes back to you in a good way, one way or the other, in the same way that, you know, everybody screamed and screamed about how, like, you know, I mean, like, not that it's the same situation at all, but everybody screamed and screamed about how the IT situation was going to come back to the Celtics negatively. You know, maybe something like this is like, you know, these types of little,
yeah,
you know, these little like, hey, let me help you along. Those things can come back in a positive way too.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the Celtics are conscious of that. And I think a lot of teams are, but it's a smart way to operate, I think. And hey, yeah, look, you develop him, maybe you move him to a team that is, I don't know, I'm going to say Utah, not to say go to Utah, but I mean, maybe
does seem like a Danny Ainge kind of guy.
He does. But I think that type of situation, a team that's just kind of starting to rebuild, that has a veteran that you might say, okay, let's see if we can poach one of these veterans. Here's a young guy that might be promising. You're going to get him for dumping your salary and a guy that's more helpful to us now. And then he goes off and then they'll see. And then who knows, maybe 4 or 5 years from now, when that guy's a free agent, you say, hey, we like the way you've developed some more JD Davison. We'd like to bring you back. And sure, at that point, he's more helpful. So there are a bunch of different ways that this can go. So an interesting kid to watch. And I think he has promise.
Before you kick it off, I did think it was hilarious that Luke Kornet brought him an apple pie for his birthday. Incredible stuff.
I mean, yeah. I mean, he's probably just sitting there going like, what's here in the cafeteria? Oh, there's an apple pie. Here you go, kid. Happy birthday.
Kornet is no joke funny. Like,
he's legit.
Like, he's like not even just like for an athlete funny. He's like, he's quick. He's funny. I like him.
He was on the Celtics media day talking about, like, well, you know, they're talking about the Brad Stevens, for people who didn't see it, the Brad Stevens, like, the only thing he's liked on Twitter is the video of his crossover. And then he just took it and ran. He's like, yeah, you know, obviously they're going to tailor the offense around me. And, you know, people compare me to Allen Iverson, like that whole thing. Even at practice yesterday, he's out there. He's just kind of like trying to work his way back from that sprained ankle. And Noah Vonleh walked by and said something to him. And he just turns and looks. He goes, can you please respect my workout? Like, he's just, the way he's just like delivering the little, you know, jabs, it's just kind of, he's a legitimately funny guy.
Yeah.
I think that we need to see maybe a little bit more of him in front of the mic. But yeah, the apple pie thing was funny.
Get him on the pod, man. What are you doing here?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, that's true. If he can grow a mustache, then I'll look at him. Maybe I can get him as Luke,
I don't like that.
Luke underscore Cornette. I mean, it could upgrade. It seems like
He's funnier than me. I don't want you.
You know,
I don't want to be competing with that.
He might replace both of us if he comes on the podcast.
Well,
that might be how that goes. All right. We'll come back and we'll talk a little bit about this GM survey. A couple of interesting little things over there. People say Marcus Smart snubbed, disrespected. I don't know. We'll see about that. First, let's talk about a very fun game, Prize Picks. You know, the thing about Prize Picks is it's daily fantasy that it helps you. It's just more fun. It's just more fun than a lot of these other daily fantasy games, right? You can take multiple players and pick against their over under. So like Luka Doncic to score so many points, Steph Curry, Jason Tatum, assists. You can go over unders on all of these guys. It's a lot of fun. And you know, you can do multiple entries, you do multiple sports, you pick 2 to 5 players, and you know, if they score more or less than their Prize Picks projection, you can win up to 10 times your money, and that happens on any entry. There's no competing against other people, you against the projections. That is so huge for daily fantasy, because normally you're going up against pros and it's not worth it. You're not competing against other people. Prize Picks offers projections on any sport that you watch. That's NBA, NFL, MLB, NHL, PGA, college football, men's basketball, women's college basketball, soccer, WNBA, esports, NASCAR, tennis, MMA, boxing, disc golf, Euro basketball, cricket, all there. You can make your entries in 60 seconds or less. Very easy, and it's safe and fast withdrawals. Currently operational in over 30 states and in Canada. So download the Prize Picks app or go to prizepicks.com to sign up and play daily fantasy sports. First-time users can get a 100% instant deposit match up to $100 with promo code LOCKEDON. So if you deposit $100, Prize Picks will give you $100. If you deposit $50, Prize Picks gives you $50. You basically win right away. But don't forget to enter that promo code LOCKEDON at sign-up for an instant deposit match up to $100 at prizepicks.com. And thanks for making Locked On Celtics your first listen every day. Make sure you check out the Ultimate Pro Basketball Preview. It starts next week, October 10th. A 6-episode extravaganza to get you ready for the NBA season. Local team experts, including me and the NBA insiders of the Locked On Podcast Network and Odyssey, all combining into one ultimate NBA preview. It starts October 10th. So search for Ultimate Pro Basketball Preview 2022 on your Odyssey app, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. Let's bring in temporary underscore boy Tom Westerholm until the Luke Cornette thing works out to talk a little bit about. You look a little Luke Cornette-ish, maybe. I'm telling you, if it's from Russia.
Is it mostly because you can see Luke wearing glasses like this?
Yes, totally.
Okay.
GM survey dropped, which is always interesting. I always like to say GM in quotes survey, because I don't know how many GMs actually fill this out. How many of the assistants fill that out, but a couple of things here. Just, you know, it's always just a series of questions. What GMs think, front offices think, heading into the 2023 season. And it's a good little temperature check on the league. So, which
side
team?
Side note about that, real quick. Do you think Brad Stevens votes on this because he is technically the president of basketball operations? Like, he's not the GM.
But do they have a GM? They don't have a GM.
I think that's Zarin's title, right? Like, I don't know.
Zarin is counsel. Let me see if the Celtics front office page is back up. They had to take it down because people were acting like jerks.
Right.
But let me see if their staff page is up. Anyway.
Okay.
So because Zarin is assistant to the
regional manager. Yeah.
Assistant to the regional manager. Yes. That's exactly it. The vice president of basketball operations. Okay. Assistant general manager is Austin Ainge.
Okay.
I don't see a general manager on here. It's president of basketball operations. Some teams have a president of basketball operations and a GM, and the GM will take the trade calls and stuff and it works its way up. I don't know. I think basically Brad, yes. Brad is the guy.
Right.
Or yes.
It'd be an easy way to pass it off though, by saying that's not my title.
Yeah, no, I didn't do that. It's the GM survey, John. I didn't say anything. Right. All right. Which team will win the 2023 NBA Finals? Bucks number one at 43%, Warriors at 25%, Clippers at 21%, Celtics at 11%. But everybody picks Boston as the second best team in the East. I think that seems fair. I mean, I know everybody's like, I don't know how close it is, but I think the Ime Udoka stuff, Rob not being here for probably close to half the season, if the numbers are correct, I think it's fair to say, okay, maybe the Celtics do fall behind the Bucks. They've got Giannis. Middleton is out to start the season, but like, you know, they've made some decent moves. If then they pick up Joe Ingles, if he comes back and does anything, like that could be helpful. They've been there before. I can see people going with the Bucks. I think I might choose the Bucks as well right now, but obviously the Celtics are right there. And if Milwaukee wins, if Boston wins, if Philly wins, I'm talking about the East, not a surprise. Brooklyn, I obviously can see Brooklyn if they get their acts together, like a best case scenario, they could win the East. Yep. There's, you know, Miami has been there. I'm not as high on them, but there are a bunch of teams where you say that team's going to win the East this year. I'd be like, all right, yeah, I can see it.
Yeah, for sure. Look, I you know, it, honestly, after seeing the way Malcolm Brogdon is going to fit in, I probably would pick the Celtics at this point. However, that being said, if you are trying to make a case for a team in the East and you want to make a case that Giannis Antetokounmpo is going to lead his team through the Eastern Conference, that is always a defensible argument. Like 43% of people want to say that Giannis is going to go to the finals this year. Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. Like,
right.
Okay. I mean, the fact, you know, yeah, like I said, I think 43% sounds like a lot. I'm sure most of those 43% were deciding between picking the Bucks or the Celtics, you know?
Sure.
Like, and yeah, sounds like a lot of them shook out on the side of Giannis Antetokounmpo. And who am I to judge that decision?
Right.
You will not hear a word of criticism out of me.
MVP, Luka Doncic, no mention of Jason Tatum on here. Probably not surprising, but I'm surprised everybody, like 48% say Luka. That's high. That's high.
And that's a lot of belief in that Mavericks team. Cause I'm not huge on them, but if you're picking Luka for MVP, I mean, yeah, like yeah. I said, you're feeling like that team's going to win some games.
The best part about Luka, all right, best point guard in the NBA, number one, Steph Curry, number two, Luka Doncic. Best shooting guard in the NBA, number one, Devin Booker, number two, Luka Doncic.
Yep.
Best small forward in the NBA, number one, Kevin Durant, number two, Jason Tatum, number three, Luka Doncic. Like, Luka is like right across the board from the top three positions. You know, no one knows exactly what he is, but he's just like amongst the best at all of those things. But Jason Tatum is the second best small forward in the NBA. That's really good. I mean, you're basically putting up in that class of Kevin Durant. That's the first like really Celtics related thing here. I like where Jason Tatum is. I like the idea. I think you might have brought it up first. The narrative behind this team, where you know, emails, all that stuff. They, you know, Robert Williams hurt. Blah blah blah. Here comes Jason Tatum. Here comes Jaylen Brown. And now you've got an MVP candidate and an all NBA candidate on this team. If this team wins, the narrative shifts to, wow, they bought into the coach and the coach brought them up here to that coach left. And look at these players. Wow. Look at how good these players are to rally their team. And I think Jason Tatum has 24% saying the best small forward in the NBA. Legit. I think this ranking is pretty good. It drops LeBron down to four. It drops Kawhi down to five. I think serious injury issues with those two guys. So it's huge that Tatum is up there. And if you put him up there that high, then I think he can be an MVP candidate.
Yeah. And I mean, he closed the gap on Durant. Like last year, I don't remember.
67%.
Somebody wrote that. Yeah. He was 67% last year. Like that's trimmed down. Like Tatum is in that company. And I, you know, if you were just like, okay, one game playoff series, blah, blah, that whole argument, whatever. Yeah.
Sure.
I'd probably lean toward Durant too. Like, I think that's entirely fair. Kevin Durant is a monster, but I mean, that's the rarefied air that Tatum finds himself now. And yeah, certainly. I think, look, if the Celtics, the other thing that is kind of in Tatum's favor is when you look at the way that people are talking about him around the team, you're hearing a lot of like Tatum's talking a lot more this year. Horford saying he's been talking a lot more since the start of the playoff run. Like, yeah, those are like the types of things that you like to hear about somebody who might want to build an MVP case.
Yeah. I think he's primed for that step forward. I think that this is potentially a really big year for him. Obviously, I mean, he was first team all NBA last year. So it's not like I'm going on a limb. It's not like I'm sitting here taking out the hot take of like, oh, really? Really? You think the guy who was a first team all NBA could be an MVP candidate this year, John? Wow. Way to go out on a limb. But it's different.
Corrales A. Smith over here.
Yeah. But it's different. And I think people understand what I'm saying when I say that, like he spent half a season last year as the MVP candidate. I think to be a legitimate MVP candidate, you gotta do it from basically day one. You gotta come in November and not do what Tatum has done, which is forget how to finish at the rim for a couple of months, or geez, he's shooting 20% from three for the first couple of months. You can't do that. You gotta come in and be ready to go from day one. So if he can do that, and it goes along with what we're saying in the last segment. If he can do that and the team can rally around, he's so focused that he's coming out to that hot start, then his stock even rises even more. A couple of other things before we move on. Celtics, best defensive team in the NBA, 69% of the vote by far. Golden State was number two with 10%. But that goes into the best defensive player in the NBA. You don't even have Marcus Smart in the receiving votes.
Yeah.
Candidate,
that was wild.
Which is wild because the next question is, who is the best perimeter defender in the NBA? Number one, Marcus Smart with 41%. How can you say who is the best defensive player in the NBA? And you go Giannis number one, Draymond number two, Rudy Gobert number three, and then Bam, Drew Holiday, Kawhi Leonard, Ben Simmons, Andrew Wiggins, and then say Marcus Smart is the best perimeter defender in the NBA. You mean to tell me that everybody who voted him best defender couldn't say he's the best player? I mean, the best defensive player? That doesn't make any sense to me.
Like literally the defense player of the year last year. Like
seriously,
nothing. Like
nothing.
Again. You know, kind of similar to the Bucks over the Celtics or KD over Tatum. If you want to tell me that Giannis Antetokounmpo and Draymond Green are better defenders than Marcus Smart, no, fine, completely fine.
I get
those
it.
Guys are unbelievable. Plenty of people want to make the case for Rudy Gobert. I will not be caught making the case for Rudy Gobert than Marcus Smart. But that's neither here nor there. I just like the idea that all of these guys who are being listed. I mean, you know, like look. Kawhi is amazing, but like I don't know what to expect from him. You know, really, he's over Smart too. I mean,
that's a reputation vote. We haven't seen him in a long time.
I guess how does Marcus Smart not have a reputation vote at this point? Like,
right,
it's really weird. Like, I mean, he's really good. And I look, like a lot of these guys know a lot about basketball, and certainly, you know. No more than me, and probably, you know, I've certainly watched, you know, more league-wide action than I do. I'm biased because I, you know, just like purely because I watch Marcus Smart a lot, and I'm like, wow, this guy's really good. But it that one baffles me a little bit that like no votes at all feels like a massive oversight.
It does. It's so weird because you can turn around and say, oh well, no, he wasn't disrespected. He got the perimeter thing, but it just. Feels like that caveat gets thrown in there for some reason. And I will cape a little bit here for Marcus Smart. You can't tell me that all he is a perimeter defender. We talked about him switching onto bigs. We just talked about it in yesterday's podcast. When the Celtics open the season, you're going to see Marcus Smart take a turn on Joel Embiid. He's going to switch, and Joel Embiid and Marcus Smart will be a matchup. And you know what? It's not a guaranteed win for Joel Embiid. It's not. We've seen bigs. Now, he it's different with him, but we've seen other bigs try to post Marcus Smart up and can't. He plays well down there. He's not just the perimeter defender. Giannis is, I think you can say, you say better overall because he's big and he's super athletic. He's made some of the best defensive plays I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yes.
And so, you know, like the play in the finals where he came up and hedged and then turn around and swatted away the alley-oop, like that is the absolute number one best defensive play I've ever seen in my life. He does stuff like that. Ooh, caught myself. He does stuff like that on a like seemingly regular basis. So yeah, I can get, you say Giannis is a better defender than Marcus Smart. I can see that argument, but
Draymond is Marcus Smart, but a little bigger. You can see that argument too.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. So I don't know. I just feel like, I feel like this is going to be something where Marcus, like, you know, you look at him the wrong way and he's going to use it as motivation. He's going to sit there and say, I was the defensive player of the year. And you can't put me in the list of best defenders, overall defenders. You got to put me in this little separate class. Well, but you're the best perimeter defender. It just doesn't make sense. It doesn't make any sense. All right. I feel good leaving it there. That's all. After all, it's just the GM survey and all the other stuff doesn't really matter. Celtics have the second best home court advantage behind the Toronto Raptors. That's nice. Fans like to hear that. You know, it's great. I mean, it is a loud building. That building gets loud and not fake Philly loud, because Philly is fake loud. It's super loud in there, but they pump a lot of stuff in.
And it would be, I still, that's one of the great tragedy is the word I was going to use, which is a massive overstatement. It's a real shame that Philly is so pumped in loud, because Philly would be real life loud if they just let them be loud. Like those fans would go crazy. Like, it'd be a fun,
it's a great atmosphere.
Fun venue.
But it's my favorite road atmosphere. I love being in Philly for Philly Celtics. I love that atmosphere. Oh my God.
Electric.
It's the best. It's the best. It plays into like when I was playing and I just love being on the road. It's shutting up a road crowd is the best. But that, just walking into that place and just feeling tangible hate for the Celtics.
It's so,
I'm like,
good.
Oh, it's that's so fun.
It's so hostile. It's good.
I do love it so much.
So turn down the Jumbotron for the love of everything. It's too loud.
I know. It gets way too loud in there. Fans are plenty loud in there. All right, let's knock out a couple of these. Before the show, we're sitting here like, oh man, I don't know what to talk about. I don't know if we're going to get to half an hour. And here it is, half an hour in. We haven't gotten to the third thing we wanted to talk about. So let's get to a couple of these mailbag questions that I promised at the top. Philip, who asked, preseason game one answered a lot of questions about what our offense might look like. In terms of defense, I was left with questions that as we were not running a switch everything defense. Cavangeli said in practices they run drop coverage. What is going on there? Are they temporarily keeping it simple for the new guys? Or is there some admission that we can't run the same defense as last year without Rob? Before the podcast, you were saying, yes, I also had a similar question. So, good.
Well, yeah, I mean, not so much question. It was very clear. I think the two things that does for you. One, it's just a little bit easier for Al, I think. Like, and when he's being asked to do so much, maybe you just sacrifice a little bit of the just this hyper aggressive, like kill you with every switch type defense that the Celtics run. Again, it does kind of come back to whenever Rob comes back, I think that's going to kind of come back and Al's going to be able to do a little bit more. And especially if Noah Vonleh is going to make this team, it's going to be a droppy team. that dude is not switching.
He is not.
So, you know, I think that was part of the other reason too, is, you know, Vonleh is going to be in drop coverage whenever he's in, and he played quite a few minutes on Sunday, whatever day that was. So yeah, to me, those were the two biggest things, but it was interesting to watch because it was a tangible difference from last year.
Vonleh is going to switch. Vonleh's not going to switch. Luke Kornet is not going to switch.
No,
Biondo Cabangeli is not going to switch.
Nope.
So if most of your bigs are not going to be able to play the style that you want to play, then don't play that style. Don't say this is what we do. Just go do it. You got to adjust. And especially because of Al Horford, you don't want to just have Al switching out onto the perimeter now. I don't want to do it. It's right. Like we were talking about the Phoenix Suns losing to the Australian team. And, you know, that was like a little bit of a buzz in practice where I was talking to somebody about it. Like, you know, you're not going to get Chris Paul being 100%. If I'm the Suns, I'm telling Chris Paul, don't do anything at 100% until like Christmas. Right. So kind of the same thing with Al Horford. You don't want him going out there in preseason game one, switching everything. Like, that's not, I don't want to see that at all.
Right.
And I don't want to see him switching everything early on anyway. We know that they can do it. They know that they can do it. They know when they can do it. That's something that's in their pocket. When you need Al Horford to go out there and be switchy big man, he will go out there and be that. For now, drop coverage will be fine. You can use the switch every once in a while. You can switch with Grant. If Grant's in there, he goes small. If you throw that small lineup with Tatum at the five, you can certainly switch all that. But I think there are places, times and places for it. And so I feel like it's part of the plan and part of just the personnel, and you're just going to have to deal with the personnel better. I think it's smart to adjust your game plan to who you have and not try to shoehorn who you have into the game plan. So
agreed.
All right. And then the other mailbag question that we had was about, it comes from Jordan, who said, will a team come to terms with Grant Williams? What's the roadmap to keeping him in Boston long-term? Is he a trade chip if they don't iron something out soon? I know I've said something on the podcast about if you give him an extension, it does throw the poison pill provision in there. So if you do somehow in the middle of the season decide, okay, we're going to need Grant Williams in this trade, it's not going to be like Tyler Hero, who just got massive money in the poison pill. Poison pill, just for people who don't know, and I don't know why anybody would, for it just changes the matching, the salary matching requirements. The other team is using the average of all the remaining years as the salary match. So when Tyler Hero gets this massive contract, and he's on the last year of his a rookie deal, you take all the years of the contract that he signed plus the last year of that rookie deal, get the average number, and for salary matching purposes, that's what the receiving team is using.
Right.
But the trading team is using that year's actual rookie contract salary. Makes it very difficult to match. It's not going to be that difficult with Grant Williams because he's not going to get that much money. But it still complicates things. So two things at play. One, either the Celtics can't come to terms. They don't value him as highly as Grant's team values Grant. And they're going to say, we're going to go to restricted free agency and they can play that restricted free agency game. Or the Celtics are saying, we got some irons in the fire. And we know that we've had some discussions here and there and someone's expressed an interest in Grant and there may be something. And if Grant plays his way into more value, then that means there's less that we have to trade, and Grant plus whatever pieces we need equals the player that we want. Now you're trading just matching salary, and you can go into next summer. If that doesn't work out, you don't even have to let them get to restricted free agency. You can negotiate a deal in the summer and say, here's the deal. We want to work with you and get it done. Then not a big deal. Not every rookie gets extended now.
Nope.
But you keep that flexibility of Grant as a trade chip by keeping on his rookie deal and not complicating the salary match.
Yep, I agree with you covered pretty much everything that I was going to say.
Sorry.
No, you're good. That was very succinct. The only things that I would add is, like, it used to be pretty commonplace that the Celtics didn't come to terms with their—
That's true.
Like, they didn't used to extend people as much as they have been recently. So that's not a huge surprise. Also, like, just to build off your point, like, you take Grant, you take a pick, you take like a Derek White, that would, like, or you know, some other good player who's kind of superfluous on your roster. that will get you some places in a trade conversation. Grant is a legit young piece. Like, he could start in a lot of situations. Mm-hmm. Like, you could be trading, like, a young starter quality player, a pick. I mean, again, like, to me, the Celtics don't look like a team that has, like, a ton of holes. That they, you know, they don't look like a team that's going to, like, necessarily need a lot of stuff. And if that's the case, and if you want to keep Grant, and you, like you said, you go into next season, no harm, no foul. You can just do it then. But, like, yeah, Grant would get you in, like, the way that he played in the playoffs and the experience that he has and the switchability and the three-point shooting and all this stuff. He'll get you into some conversations that might be worth having if you're struggling a little bit halfway through the season and you're a little worried about how the season is going to kind of end. So,
That's right.
I just think it makes a lot of sense. Like, and none of this is to say that Grant isn't coming back next year or that he's, like, you know, purely trade fodder. None of that stuff. Right. He's just not part of the core that needs to stay in place. So he's not going to get extended right now.
That's right.
To my guess, you know, maybe I'm wrong, but I think everything that you said is sounds exactly right to me.
I feel like just trying to be smart front office, you know, I'm very rarely a smart front office person. So I'm not trading that guy. But listen, you don't lock up long-term pieces that can be replaced. And Grant, I like Grant. I think they want to keep him, like you said, if they want to keep him, I'm fine with that. And I don't know what the number will be, but if Grant Williams sticks around and is a piece of this for the long term, absolutely fine. Congratulations. Yep. Like, I'm in on that. That's fine. But you can find players like him, and you can find players who maybe not quite as good, but can do enough of that job where the promise of Grant, and like you said, if Derek White ends up being superfluous and those picks, you got picks there hanging around. Now you've got salary numbers in matching and, you know, promise and players and picks. You got a lot. You don't want to say, okay, we're going to go hunt this trade. What you don't want as the Celtics, a team that is on the verge of winning a championship, on the verge of, you know, they're a contender. What you don't want to do is screw yourself because you've tied up Grant Williams long-term and you can't make the money work for a player that you didn't realize was going to be available.
Right.
And now all of a sudden he is. And now because of the poison pill, they need to throw somebody else in, or you need a third team and no one wants to be that third team, or you got to throw, maybe those two guys don't work. You got to throw another guy in and the Celtics don't want to give up another guy. All those little things you don't want to do. Plus, also one last thing on that. Teams like signing guys to their own contracts.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
So you can give Grant, and even if they're like, even if you can make the money work, you want that other team wants to sign Grant to that deal if he is traded. So you want to keep that flexibility. Another receiving team likes the idea of talking to Grant themselves and saying, here's what we want to offer you. We traded for you because we want you. Here's what we're willing to do.
Yep.
It just makes that feel a little bit better, more palatable for that other team. Again, it is clear. We got to make it clear. And you've said it. I've said it. I'm going to say it again. This isn't to say I think the Celtics are shopping Grant Williams. And I've made this point on the podcast before. I don't think that they're shopping Grant Williams. Mm-mm. But I do think they see Grant Williams as a good player who could be potentially a trade piece. And you lock up a guy like Robert Williams. You lock up, you know, obviously Jalen and Jason. You lock up those guys. But Grant, you say, let's talk about it at the end of the season. I don't even want to let you go into restricted free agency.
Right.
We're gonna work out a deal once the season's over. But right now, because of everything, we need our flexibility. I'm sorry we can't do it. And you just got to say, this is the business part of it. We got to understand the business. We love you. We want to keep you. But business is business. And you want to keep your flexibility. We want to keep ours. And so be it. So that's the Grant answer.
Yep. And if Grant is a little unhappy, sorry, man. it doesn't matter as much as, like, you're not the guy that, like, everybody's worried about keeping happy. That's Jalen right. and Jason. Yeah, that's that.
Right.
Like,
it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter as much as it does DeAndre Ayton in Phoenix. Phoenix biffed that deal. Now, yeah. Phoenix played that restricted free agency deal and blew it. They yes. made a big mistake the way they handled that. You can do that with Grant, and he could be like, oh, I didn't like that. But he doesn't have the option. Like, DeAndre Ayton was, like, he sits there and says, hey, man, I did everything you guys asked me to do. I sacrificed my game. I did all of the dirty work you guys asked me to do. And then you turn around and say, we don't want to pay you the money? Like, you're using me sacrificing against me. I don't like that. And yep. then he went out. They made him go out and get that deal. It cost him money, even though he's getting generational wealth. It still cost him money. Yeah. That's a recipe to piss off a star player. Grant, unfortunately, not going to be in that mix because Grant's working his butt off, doing everything that the Celtics ask of him, but he doesn't have a 22 and 12 rebounds average in him like right. DeAndre does.
The big difference is that like what the Celtics are doing for Grant is raising his value. Like they're helping him make more money down the line.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And side note, I loved the way Grant played in the first preseason game. I thought he was fluid.
Grant is so good. Like
I thought he was smooth.
Yeah.
I mean, he had a couple of drives. It's the littlest things, but just the little footwork and the quickness of the decision-making that wasn't there last year. A couple of attacks, the lefty finish that he had, I forget who was closing out on him, but it was just bip, bip, two steps and then bam, right by him left. And I was like, wow, quick decision. And he's worked his footwork to a point where it looked like he could have been, he was setting up for a shot, but then he turned it on and drove. I was like, that's new. And then he did it again on the right side of the floor and it drew a foul. And I was like, that whatever that was, if Grant keeps doing that, I think we're seeing level up Grant this year. So yeah, I think that there's a real possibility of Grant raising his value a lot. Now, whatever that means as part of what we just said, but I really do think that there's something based just on that first game. There was just some extra fluidity in decision-making on that. The spin and the dump off to Vonleh for the dunk. Nice. He's got something extra this season. I'm looking forward to watching him.
Yep. Yeah. And the thing with Grant, you always know, like, whatever, like, so 2K, right? They have like the potential for each player. It's like the, what's the absolute best that this guy could hit? Grant, you just like, if his potential is B+ or whatever, you know he's gonna be a B+. Like he's gonna get there. Like whatever iota, whatever little bit of maximizing that Grant Williams can do with his game, at some point during his career, he's gonna get to that point because that's just kind of the way he works. So yeah, he's a pretty good player, man.
He's a good player. All right. This is we really do have to like realize that we're just not gonna go 30 minutes.
It's not gonna happen.
It's not gonna happen.
Sorry,
no matter like what we said at the beginning, like seriously before the show started, I'm like, what are we gonna talk about? And we could have done the whole podcast on just this Grant question.
Honestly, yeah, that was a fun one.
All right. Well, I do hope everybody appreciates Tom Westerholm, Tom_. You earned it.
Thank you.
See,
thank you.
That's what you did. You don't get the applause at the beginning. You gotta work for your food, man.
You know what? We can come to terms on this agreement. We can. I won't go into restricted free agency pissed because I agree to these terms.
All right. Because I don't know. The Locked On Pistons podcast might be calling. All right. Thanks to Tom Westerholm. As usual, fun here with the underscore boys. I really had fun with this podcast. Sometimes flying by the seat of your pants is just a fun way to do the show. Hope you had fun with the podcast and you stuck around for the whole thing. If you're still listening to the sound of my voice, hopefully that means you're subscribed. But if not, that means that you want to subscribe. So subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. You can also get the show on YouTube. Ring the bell on YouTube. Get notified as soon as a show drops. Again, I like to drop the YouTube videos as soon as they're ready. So you get some advanced access there. It's an early drop. Plenty of people, thousands and thousands of people are listening to the show first thing in the morning when the audio drops. Nothing changes for you guys. But if you're up late and you want to watch the show, It's on YouTube. Get that notification. Leave a comment. Feed the algorithm. And most importantly, share the podcast. Tell your friends and family and everybody that they should be listening to and watching the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.